A colossal monster, a city in ruins, no way out, except inside of the all-electric Toyota CHR. John Cho stars in Escape. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family today. Toyota, let's go places.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got the 2026 paternity slash wedding chronicles here for you. Greetings from the past. We're in the past. You're in the future. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan. I don't know. Sailor of Mean Sacks. I choked. I had nothing ready.
Wow. You choked. You were all ready with the time traveling. I thought you got so much there. I don't know. Time warp, future sight.
There we go. You nailed it.
The very strange thing about this, I don't think you even know this. This is, as I have scheduled them, the last.
This is number four.
This is number four of the Paternity Chronicles. So we're so far in the future. This is the farthest out I think we've ever recorded an episode. This is like almost going to be 2 months from when we record.
Except I don't think this is going to be number four, or we're going to have to switch the order around because I am committed. I have the cube fire. Lords of Limited is happening. Yeah. I can't stop thinking about it, and I'm going to dive into it this week. I've got some time. It's happening.
Okay. Lords of Limited cube as promised. I was thinking how very so I will be 3 weeks, 4 weeks deep into baby number two fatherdom. And when you have a kid, when you have a baby, you don't sleep. But the reason you don't sleep is not because, I mean, babies cry, but it's not really because the baby is crying all the time and inconsolable. It's that they have to eat constantly. So you're constantly every 3 hours, they got to eat in those first few weeks. And so that's what is making you so tired, is that you're up, you're just living these 8 3-hour chunks every day. And we referred to that as time soup. And I feel like it's very apt that this is very time soupy of us to be recording, where this is the first Paternity Chronicles episode we're recording, but it's the last one we'll be releasing. But now you're throwing a wrench into it with LOL Cube coming back. So I don't know, but very excited to be diving into this episode today.
Yes, absolutely. We've got some great questions here from our listeners.
Yeah, I was, after we did bedtime last night, I plopped on the couch and opened my laptop, and oftentimes when that's happening, that's because I'm going to play Magic, but I was clacking away more than usual. And Jen was like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, we're doing a Q&A episode tomorrow. And I feel like I really have to, it's not something where I feel like I can come to it just on the fly. Cause a lot of these questions are okay, you're designing the next whatever. And it's not the kind of thing where you can come and be I don't know. So I really felt like I had to do my due diligence to prep for this Q&A episode, but I was really excited by it. I messaged you after I was done with my little answer blitz. And I was like, I think this is going to be a really fun conversation to have. I'm pretty proud of some of my answers here. So
I feel like that is always the cycle we go through with these Q&A episodes. Yeah. I always float we could do a Q&A episode. And you're Q&A episodes are terrible. And then you're if you do it all, we can do it. And I solicit the questions, get them in a doc. And you're I kind of like this. We should do this more.
Yeah. Well, I think we've reached I think once a year seems to be a good cadence.
Yes.
Maybe since we're dipping into it now, we usually do it around the wintertime holidays, so maybe we'll double dip this year. But yes, you are right. This does feel like a familiar feeling that I'm having about this Q&A episode. We'll do our usual housekeeping, and then we will dive right into the episode here. So our housekeeping, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We've got some great perks over at the Patreon. We've got access to our Discord, which is just a great community of like-minded limited individuals. You better believe I will be leaning heavily on the Discord, getting my FOMO for the Marvel set for these few weeks. I'm sure I will say that on future episodes that you will have already listened to. How's that for time soup? We have some higher rewards as well. You have access to our podcast feed, which gets you not only access to this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please head on over to our Patreon page. And we don't have fresh patrons this week to shout out, so we will just shout out our past, present, and future patrons and say thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, truly thank you to be allowing me paternity leave from my podcasting life. That is just an incredible gift to be given by you all each and every week. So thank you for your support.
Yeah, truly. I mean, and even beyond that, just the fact that the podcast is still afloat and going, and we're coming up on, what, 500 episodes?
I went back. 500.
I went back and I was searching for I remember the timestamp or like the limited resolution question, and I needed to go back and look at my limited resolutions. And I was like, it ended in a 60, and I searched 260, and I was like, no, that was wrong. And then I searched 360, and I was like, well, nope, that was wrong. And I was like, oh God, 460. We're coming up on 500 here. Time flies, and truly pretty incredible that we've had the support that we've had the whole way through. So seriously, thank you, everyone.
So you sent out the bat signal on multiple platforms, and we got a treasure trove of questions here to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kick it off. Start with the questions from Discord. Cliche wants to know, what was your first Magic set, and have you ever gone back and done a draft of that set or block?
This is a question that I feel like has multiple answers. But what I mean by that is that, like, I don't really remember what set I started with when I was like 7. Like, I had a box of just random Fallen Empires, Homelands, 4th edition Ice Age cards, like chaff that no one wanted. So if that counts as a set, I guess that's my first set. But then when I came back to the game in 2010, that was like M11 was when I really started. And then so then the block after that was Scars of Meriden. And I've drafted Scars of Meriden, triple Scars into the full block, which is Meriden Besiege, New Phyrexia, a lot back in the day.
That was a great draft format. I loved that draft format.
I mean, yes, it was great. Have you gone back to do a draft of it since? It just doesn't really hold up.
I have not, but I loved, there was like this 5 and a green 5/5 that lets you gain 5 life or something somehow.
Whenever an artifact went to the graveyard.
Yeah, it was like repeated. God, that card was so broken.
Yeah,
so broken.
That was a common, I think, in Mirrodin Besieged. Yeah, but except sometimes if people were doing the infect life, then it just didn't matter. Like your life.
But
totally
you just won if your opponent's doing the infect thing. For me, it was 4th edition and or like Fallen Empires. Those were my first two packs of Magic cards, and I have never gone back and done a draft of those. I was trying to think of what the first set.
Can you draft Fallen Empires? Aren't the packs like 6 cards or something?
I said no. I haven't gone back and done it.
Like could one? You? I'm just asking. Like, is it even possible to do
team draft, baby? Six packs of six cards.
There you go. You built a 20-card deck.
Fourth edition would be cute to go back and draft. I was trying to remember what the first set I drafted was, though, and I don't remember. Like, I don't think we drafted Mirage. Maybe something in the Tempest block. But whenever Unglued came out, Unglued was the first unset. I have memories of like drafting that at our lake house and getting arguments over who snuck cheaty faces onto the battlefield successfully. But I don't have like a vivid memory of what the first set we would have drafted was.
You did leave and come back, right? Or did you ever really leave?
Nah, never really left. Like, even when I was out, we would usually do a draft of whatever the new format was, like a kitchen table draft with my brothers. We would usually do one. Like, I was gone totally for a very brief period of time, like during the Urza's block, like that era. Urza's IPA, like Mass block, or... Yeah, Mass is different than IPA, right? That era, I wasn't drafting hardly at all. Was infrequent in the sets around those, but I don't remember doing any of those.
Pangean C asks, here's a fun question. Wizards of the Coasts has asked you to design the next limited format with your favorite set mechanics and keywords across Magic's history. What would be the set theme or themes, and what 5 to 10 mechanics would you choose and why? So my theme was cards two ways. So I'm bringing back Adventure, Flashback, Evoke, MDFCs, and sort of a cheaty mechanic, which is I just want companions in my set. But I want new companions that are designed for limited. They don't have to break constructed, but I want limited companions.
Cards two ways. I like it. I started with the mechanics and then tried to tie them together with a set theme. So okay. my list of mechanics is cycling, delirium, surveil, connive, madness, like all kind of going into graveyard-y stuff. Like yeah. really would like the set to be focused around delirium. And then some others just to fill out the 10. I love start your engines. Love a good artifacts matter theme. So food, treasures, clues. And then the artifacts and artifacts and enchantments matter stuff from Neo. So those are the
we're bloating.
Yeah. If I had to list it limited to five, it would be those first five: cycling, delirium, surveil, connive, madness. Because I'd want to do a la Duskmourn, a la Shadows over Innistrad, like that sort of graveyardy stuff. And my set theme is going to be like a post apocalyptic future. Like a la Fallout, the TV show, but not Universes Beyond. Just like a magic post-apocalyptic future.
Okay. Okay. I like it.
All right. Roma Venka wants to know. Shout out to Roma. We see them a lot at Magic Con events. What's your favorite thing you got to do or experience because of your role hosting this podcast?
What say you?
Me first?
Yeah, you first.
I mean, there's so much. It's so hard to choose.
Unfortunately, the question is, what's your favorite thing?
I can't. Ugh. I mean, I get to talk to you every week. I think it is our friendship if I had to choose one. But if it is an experience, I think it's like maybe the live show at MagicCon Chicago or the team drafts at LR, like with LR, or like one of my favorite memories of Chicago was the one where you were on the PT, right? Mm-hmm, at Chicago, yeah. We did the live show. Mm-hmm. Like going there that Thursday before and like doing paper drafts, those tables in the lobby, and like Luis's team was over there. And it just felt like we were all like hanging out and kind of like, as somebody who was not in the pro tour, felt like part of the pro scene. Like that was a very cool experience to feel like was on the in crowd of the Magic pro scene. Like that was a really cool specific niche experience.
I agree. I felt like the obvious answer right now, I didn't realize that like my friendship with you was on the table as an answer for this question. So that has to be chief number one. But then I feel like the face up answer is the weekend you're talking about. Like I get to do the news desk stint. We got to do our live show on the main stage at MagicCon Chicago. Those were great. But honestly, I think for me, it's that we got to work for Channel Fireball and
write articles.
Like working for Channel Fireball felt like I have arrived. Like we grew up watching videos on that website, and then to be contributors on that website before the whole getting swallowed by TCG player thing happened, that was really cool. And like, we got to do the LOL versus LR showdown videos as a result, and writing articles and like seeing our names up there with like read an article by Ben Wernie and Reed Duke and Luis Scott Vargas. Like that's so cool. That was so cool.
That just reminded me. Do you remember the first time our podcast went up on the Mothership, like the main website?
Yes.
And we didn't know it was going to happen. And you messaged me like that was also just wild the first time it happened, or the first time we got preview cards. Like there were so many things in those first like 3 to 5 years that were first that were just like, wow, this is incredible. Is this actually happening to us?
And now we're just old and jaded.
Not true.
Stardust2187 asks, who is a guest you've had on the show once or twice before that you would love to have back on the show? And who is someone that hasn't been on the show before that you'd love to have on the show as a guest for the first time?
I think we have the same answer here. But go ahead. You shoot.
Returning guests? I have two on my list. One is Ryan Sachs. Is that who you're saying is the...
That is not. No.
I wonder if we don't have any overlap. I said Ryan Sachs, who I don't know how much he's involved in Magic anymore, but he was our first returning guest, I believe, and also just like had some really great level ups for us when he was a guest on. I just feel like he approaches the game from such a different perspective, but also is very good at articulating that perspective. The other person is Andrew Cuneo. I have loved having him on the two times that he's been on.
Oh, Andrew's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, this was a slam dunk answer, not close to close, and it was Ben White's. Like, we got to have Ben White's on. We got to have Ben White's to talk about set designs. And my answer to the second part is, I think we need to have more set designers on as guests. Like, if we could try to set that up, like, I think we need to be more intentional about that, because I think that was probably the best episode we put out in the last couple of years, would be my guess. And I think a large part of that was due to, wow, that face. Ben was just so articulate, and it was so...
I feel like you're like, the best episode we put out was the one where we barely talked.
Well, but it was such a cool, interesting, unique conversation. And Ben was very articulate, and also, I think, very willing to peel back the curtain.
Well, and to that, the people that I was thinking about of, like, who would we want to have as a guest for the first time, honestly, we will have just checked off a big one. Jim Davis is someone I have wanted to talk to for a long time. And so I guess I'm hoping that interview is good, but
hoping that comes through.
Hoping that goes well and comes through.
No pressure, but, Jim. You better be there.
But like, I just have to imagine it will. Otherwise, cut that. But then the other names that came to mind were, like, I don't know, limited crushers on the pro scene currently, like Nathan Stoyer or Simon Nielsen. And Cedric Phillips also came to mind as, like, just another
Cedric
person.
Cedric would be a great guest, man.
I don't know. He's intimidating to me.
Like, he is intimidating to me, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so confident and so subtly confident. Like, that man knows how to command a room. Correct. Even via email. Like, when we, you're talking about Channel Fireball and SCG, and we got our first email from Cedric about content and just, like, expectations and blah, 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 blah. And, like, I don't remember what he said at the end of his email, but he was just, like, so genuine and so down to earth. And
yeah, I think I remember what his sign-offs were.
What was it?
Be excellent to each other.
Yeah. 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 Something like that. Like, I just remember reading his first email and being like, yes, I am so fired up to do a great job with these articles. Like, I am going to try my hardest for you, Cedric. Like, I was so pumped up.
The kinds of people that I feel like you are frustrated by, like the people who never go, like, an extra inch, the people who, like, you need to hold their hand through every piece of direction. Like, Cedric is the exact opposite. Like, he's going too far. Like, any expectations you could have of, like, well, this would really exceed my expectations. Like, Cedric is just going to work harder than that.
Yeah, we should get him on the show. That's a good shout.
All right, Maniac 11 says, could you lay out milestones in the journey of becoming a better limited player? Put another way, what were the biggest aha moments or level ups you noticed in your own journey to get to where you are as limited players? I've got many bullet points.
Many bullet points. You shoot first.
Okay, so I said, and these are not necessarily in an order, but I said, fundamentals, aka bread. Like, you have to understand what makes up a good limited deck. What is the end goal from drafting? What are you trying to get to? Like, I have to understand why I'm picking things, how they fit together. This gets revisited later on in some way, as, like, you then also get to know what a deck needs, but that requires understanding that, like, decks are things that can have, like, things you need to insert into them, and, like, understanding, well, more instants are better because that means I can hold things up, or what redundant effects do I want? What things do I want that I just want as a unique effect? I don't want diminishing returns. Anyway, so, but that's, like, a step 1A. Then there's understanding what reading signals is. Not necessarily being able to do it, but just understanding the concept of, like, this card is going later than it should. I should take it because maybe that means it's representative of something. Then I feel like there is this steep drop off where people do not do this step, which is the importance of consistency. Knowing that, like, two colors is better. Low curve is better. Like, the decks, I see lots of people who play a lot of Magic and they post their FNM decks on social media, and the mana base is like two duels, 5/5/4 basics. And I'm like, what? Like, I just never in my life, or maybe like 1 out of 100 drafts that I would consider a train wreck and I would never post a picture to socials about would look like that. Okay. Then there's a whole category of building around / forcing / draft preferences / warping your pick orders, which is all just under the umbrella of understanding when to deviate. So you have to like know that there's a pick order, and then knowing when you would deviate from that pick order. And then I think the next thing is gameplay level ups, like understanding why mana efficiency is so important, understanding bluffing, understanding reading opponents, flow of the game, etc. And then I wrote gameplay level up phase 2 with 4 question marks, because I feel like that's where I'm at. I'm like, I get all that stuff. And then I feel like there is a gap between me and the people out there that I think are better than me. Like, I mean, I'll name a bunch of streamers like DeFor or Lolaman or Kyle Rose, like people who just get things on a deeper level than I do. And I don't know if it's just patience. I would describe all those players as more patient than I am, but there's something that I'm missing. So whatever that gameplay level up phase 2 is, I'm looking for you.
For myself, I took it more as what were the biggest aha moments I had get where I'm at. And one was drafting with my brothers. I very distinctly remember a draft where I thought I had drafted a great deck. Like I had good creatures, good removal. Like I was sure, like I could never beat Nick. Nick is my oldest brother. He was the end boss of the Wernie drafts when we were younger. And I was sure that I had him beat this time, and he beat me. And I was like, I just don't get it. Like how do your cards do so much more than mine, or how are they so much better? And he was like, well, like I've got a lot of spell effects like stapled onto my creatures, so I get to do both at the same time. Like, so that was when I started to understand like the Flame Tongue Kavu effect, like
a two creature, for one.
You have a removal spell, like not necessarily even just a 2-for-1, but kind of that. I knew what 2-for-1s were, but I think 2-for-1s in my brain were like you set up a double block and I blow you out with an instant speed removal spell. It wasn't so much like all of it stapled onto one card, 2-for-1. It's like some card evaluation stuff there for me. I think starting to get to the point where I wanted to listen to content, like when Nick went on the Magic Cruise and like met Marshall. Whoa. On the Magic Cruise. Do you not know this story?
I don't think I knew that.
So there used to be this thing called the Magic Cruise that was like annual, where like it was what it sounds like. It was a cruise of all Magic players, and you would play Magic while you were on the ship, and then the ship would stop at ports or whatever, and you'd go do your excursions and come back on and play Magic. And so Nick went on this cruise, and he was in college, I was in high school, and like he spiked a sealed thing, I think, or maybe like a two-headed giant event. Somehow he got to play two-headed giant with LSV as his partner. And then like there was a top 8 to the whole cruise. Like it was like a triathlon. There was like modern, there was whatever. And he had top 8ed the Magic Cruise. So you drafted, and like Marshall was in this top 8 draft, and he like was talking to Marshall, and Marshall was like, yeah, I have a podcast, limited resources, whatever. And so Nick started listening, and Nick got me to start listening. And I leveled up so quickly after starting to listen to LR, because I was hungry for knowledge. And I had already, no, I don't think that was what started me going to Channel Fireball and watching videos and stuff. So like before, it had been just me like trying to figure stuff out with my brothers. And then all of a sudden, like my information world opened up drastically. So that was, I think, a big aha moment. And then another very specific one was Ryan Sachs coming on to talk about drafting with preferences, like, because previously I had been Ben Stark drafting the hard way. I have to figure out what's open, but that there was this other way. And then once I understood drafting with preferences, then starting to solve formats quickly so that I could draft with preferences that were right, like way ahead of everybody else. That was kind of my journey as a limited player.
Nice.
Balbadorf wants to know, what 3 boosters from your time as content creators are you throwing together for a mixed draft given the choice?
I said Ikoria, March of the Machine, and Throne of Eldraine. 2 out of 3 shots to get a companion, and Throne as my fave set.
Yeah, I just said, if I'm allowed, triple IKO for max companion chances also. If that's not allowed, I think I'd go IKO, March of the Machines, Duskmourn.
Also, organized limited on the Discord ever, they ask?
My initial answer was no, but then I got to thinking about the Lords of Limited Cube, and I think the answer is now yes, that the Lords of Limited Cube is incoming to the Discord.
So one of the things that we did this during the pandemic, we hosted FNMs in our Discord during lockdown, which I'm very proud of. And it was like a bit of work, and shout out to all the people. Like, we had to sort of delegate, like, you're in charge of this pod, you're in charge of this pod, and then like let it go. But it was still a bit of like, you had to have people in charge of each draft pod. And then you had to have like sort of people in charge of that time slot as well. So it was a lot of delegating and a lot of setup.
It was also a lot of lift that didn't tend to happen without push from us, or us participating, I think. There was a lot of excitement initially, yes, in the first month.
And then it dipped off, I think, as people sort of got... But I think that was more indicative of people's like flow of their lives than it was like interest in drafting with this community. Though, I don't know if that's true. But all I will say is like, I am happy to help set up the infrastructure for it, but I cannot do the like sort of nitty gritty management that it takes. And so if there are people out there in the Discord who are interested in doing the delegation and just need the setup, the Discord to be able to support it, we're there for you.
But the problem is, I just don't think it's realistic. I don't think that's realistic. I think because I do a lot more of this type of stuff than you do, like in the teaching world or in the band world, where like everybody's got ideas. Like, it's so easy to throw out like, oh, we should have limited in the Discord, like as a concept. And it's so easy to say, you're right, we should. But then in practice, like, it's just so much harder. Let's say you set up the infrastructure, and I don't mean to be a negative Nelly, but let's say we set up the infrastructure. You're also going to have people sign up. Like, we do the practice drafts, and the practice drafts fail all the time because you get 8 out of 8 in the queue, and then one person doesn't ready because they're not there. Nah. And then, like, you set up a time of we're going to draft at 8 Eastern, and you get your 8 people, but then somebody has the opportunity to go out with their friends that evening. Like, they're just going to dip and go out with their friends because there's no stakes, and we just have Arena, and the people in our Discord are affluent enough that they are listening to our podcast and able to give, you know, $1 per episode, $5 per month or whatever. Like, those people just would rather pay money to draft on Arena 10 times out of 10 times because it's more convenient. So the only draw to doing Discord drafts is if we organize it, and we can't be the ones to organize it and participate every time. So I just don't think it's realistic. Sorry to shoot that down. But wow. I do think
Ben
the
crushing
Lord of
dreams
in the just Discord. Trying to be real. Like, yeah. I don't think it's ever going to happen because of that thing, but I do intend to be the driving force behind the Lords of Limited Cube coming, because I do want to be participating in those drafts and I want to see what it's like. So I do think that is coming because I want to make it happen. But outside of like the two of us trying very hard to make things happen, I just don't think it's realistic. So you like, we had backup people, don't you remember? Like, we had 8 people, and then like 2 people that were like wild cards to hop in if somebody bailed, and people did bail. Right. Like, it's just a lot of lift to make things like that happen.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Do you want to do the Eviscerous food question?
Yeah, we've got another Eviscerous question, which is, he said, feel free to bump this to the end to make sure everyone gets at least their first question in. Ben, loved hearing about your new cooking journey after that Hello Fresh sponsorship. Any new favorite dishes that have wowed you and you've added to your cooking repertoire? I do cook now. I haven't added many dishes, but the dishes that I've added, I like quite a bit. So Catherine is also not much of a cooker, but she is, compared to me, a savant. And she has showed me what she knows. So we've been eating a lot of fish. We do a lot of oven baking, like baking salmon in the oven, and then like making asparagus or Brussels sprouts or squash and zucchini or whatever. Just fish, rice, and veggies, or similarly like chicken and breading chicken along with rice, veggies, or sometimes we'll do potatoes and green beans. But a lot of quick, easy oven baking that's like 5 minutes prep, slap it in the oven for 20, 25 minutes, and your dinner is ready to go.
Do you enjoy it anymore? Like, do you enjoy cooking at all? Yeah.
No.
It still feels like a
day. I will say I enjoy eating the home-cooked meals. Like, I prefer that to, like, eating out, which is basically what I did almost exclusively, other than turkey sandwiches. Like, I do appreciate the home-cooked meals more, but I don't enjoy the process of cooking. No.
Okay. Fair.
Feels like a chore. Dishes? Like, my dream scenario would be someone cooks, I do the dishes. I'm all about dishes. Dishes is mindless.
And that's real because you don't have a dishwasher.
I don't have a dishwasher. I do the dishes. Yeah. It's very therapeutic. That was my task when I was a child, like for our family, was doing dishes. And I do enjoy doing some dishes.
I do. I mean, yeah, I'm in the same boat there. All right. Tristan asks, do you feel like you're succeeding in your MTG New Year's resolutions so far this year? Okay. Quick rundown here of my 8 resolutions. Play more best of 3. I would say no, not succeeding. Move off your first pick more. Yes, succeeding. But that is probably also just by virtue of the kinds of sets we've had. Like Lorwyn Eclipsed and Secrets of Strixhaven have been very like, here are the signals. They're coming at you fast. No more snap keeps. I would say I'm mostly succeeding at this. Though I do catch myself still like, being like, lands and spells, click. And then like, then I look at the hand closer. I'm like, oh, this hand isn't very good, is it? So can be better there. No more plus life EV concessions. Mostly succeeding, though every fiber of my being wants to concede still.
I was going to say, that's why you're having a bad time in Strixhaven. I concede so aggressively in Secrets of Strixhaven. Like once I'm down to 10% to win, I am out because I don't want to sit around for the next 8 turns.
This is the thing about the no early concessions philosophy is that it. One of the reasons I want to do it is I hate that feeling of like, I'm going to lose. So conceding early.
Well, Strixhaven is going to get you acclimated, bud.
Well, but the whatever, 1 out of 10 times that I do win those games where I'm like, man, I would have conceded, but I won. That feeling does not counteract like that brief blip of like, oh, I won. How nice. It doesn't rinse away the 9 other games where I feel miserable. So
not even
it's
close.
Tough for me, but I'm doing a little bit better. Review more games, failing, have barely reviewed any games.
You started the gameplay review series. That doesn't count.
That's true. I am reviewing other people's games, but I'm not reviewing my own games, which I think was what
I feel like that counts.
You're giving me a loose definition. I know what I meant when I said review more games. No more lazy gameplay. Nope. Definitely still doing that. Divorce self-worth and progress as a player from winning. I would say yes. I've done a pretty good job of that. And watch more and play less. To be determined.
To be determined. We're in June, baby.
Yeah.
All right. For me, plan out the entire turn before taking actions. Not a chance. Mulligan more. Hands just have to do stuff these days. Yes, I have done a very good job of mulliganing more. Check 17 lands and check in with friends in the first 1 to 5 days of a format instead of trying to solve it in a vacuum. No, not interested in doing that. These were my New Year's resolutions were if I wanted to get better. I didn't say I was following them.
Oh my gosh.
Not tilt when things don't go my way early in a format. Even if you're getting unlucky with rares from opponents, you're still almost always doing something wrong if you're losing. I think I have generally accepted that fact and have done a better job not tilting. Don't get fancy draft syndrome. You should not move off your first pick unnecessarily. Yes, I think I've done a good job of that. Practicing draft and sealed in paper before traveling for Magic Fest that I'm going to PTQ at. I'm going to say I'm going to fail at that one before Magic Con Atlanta. Because that's like the end of Marching Man season is the week prior to Magic Con Atlanta. So there is no chance I'm going to be practicing drafting and sealed in paper. Proactively track the board state on Arena instead of playing on autopilot. Not a chance. Give my best attempts at getting into the limited championship thing. I have done that so far. There's only been one shot to queue online so far, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
And I fired tons of bullets and tried my hardest and will be trying to queue again when I go to MagicCon Atlanta.
Ray Bees asks, what factors do you think go into having a successful podcast, both ones you can control and ones you cannot control? There's so much.
So hard. And I think the vast majority of it is out of your control.
I don't agree with that.
You don't?
I don't agree with that.
I would say we got exceptionally lucky with co-host chemistry. We got exceptionally lucky with the timing of when we decided to start the podcast.
Yes, I agree with the things that are specific to us. But I think it's sort of like asking, how many factors can you control in a game of Magic? And it's like a lot. And it's also a variance machine.
Sure.
Like, that's sort of how I feel. I'm like, so there's a lot that you can control. You can control consistency in your product and in your release. You can't really control chemistry, I guess, though, but you can't, like, we would not still be doing this if we didn't have chemistry. So you can control that in a sense. Timing, I mean, sort of like rhythm, like understanding editing and also understanding like how long is it interesting to listen to this topic or, you know, just whatever, understanding things from your listener's perspective. Timely content also, like, is your content, is what you're making relevant? Are you engaging with your audience? Are you level-headed and have confidence, but also receptive to feedback? Like, there's a lot that you can control, but then there's also just, yes, you're right. We got very lucky in a lot of situations. If we were starting this podcast today, it would be a lot harder. But isn't everything like easier to start yesterday?
Sure, yeah. So go start your podcast now is the takeaway from this. I think if we want to go into like us specifically, because I think that's the only lens I can really view it from, the things sure. I think we did really well from the jump that helped us be successful were we cared about our audio quality. I think we tried to have good audio quality. We had a release schedule and we have never deviated from it ever. Like in 9 years or something. Like we've been extremely consistent about putting out content.
I mean, this will be a testament to through two babies, a wedding, overseas travel, impromptu hospital visits. We have never missed a week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we've never missed a week. I think the thing that we did.
That's just sort of psychotic, but yeah.
But I think the thing that we did the best was identify a need in the market. Like we saw a hole in the market for, like, we wanted a podcast to listen to that was our show that didn't exist. And we had a very clear idea of who our target audience was, which is us. And I don't think we've ever deviated from that ever either. Like we are making the podcast.
It has changed. Because we have changed. I think that has changed. Like we're not drafting 200 times a set anymore.
Correct.
So that has changed.
Yes. But I don't think.
And I think as a result.
The show has changed slightly, but I still think we're making it for drafters, like advanced drafters. Like the target audience was people who have graduated from limited resources. And I still think that is our target audience, despite the show looking slightly different. And I also don't think, despite the fact that we are drafting less, that the information we're putting out is any less good. Like I think I am better now at figuring out formats quickly than I was early on in the cycle of our podcast, for example.
I agree.
And then stuff you can't control is there a hole in the market? Do you have chemistry with your co-host? Like, are people going to listen? I think we also were blessed that Magic had a very good infrastructure system for finding listeners. Like, I don't remember the name of that website, but you remember there was that website that we would post to like early on?
Oh, yeah. There was just a big like Magic podcast website, right?
Website and like, we would do that. And we also had a ways to reach listeners through streaming. Like we'd already built up an audience through streaming, which probably helped the podcast gain traction. Do you remember we thought we were going to be streamers who had a podcast?
I know. Yes, I do remember that.
Oh, that was a good question.
Hevel asks, will you please join us in Degenerate Win a Box for the content?
I mean, we do.
Well, I don't.
You don't?
No, I never.
I fire off a few bullets every time.
The question is for the content. Will you make a video?
Oh.
Will you stream it?
No. No, no, no chance. Just anecdotes about how much I lose when I try it on the podcast.
So that's about it. Yeah. Best of One Sealed is
horrible.
A hellscape. Atrocious. As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
But I will always try for the collector booster boxes because I will never forget the feeling at the Magic Con of walking up to the vendor and handing them my Final Fantasy booster box and getting $1,000 cash. Like that was absurd. We'll never forget that feeling. Like they could have said 600, and I would have been like, sold, done. Give me $600.
That Magic Con was crazy. Final Fantasy was crazy. It was just a crazy event to have witnessed in Magic. Cold Brew Nate says, what are each of your all-time favorite limited build-arounds, and why is Ben's Bath Song and Ethan's Dovin's Acuity? I mean, that's the right answer for me.
I think mine might be Spider Spawning more than Bath Song.
Oh, that's a good one. I was wondering if you were going to go like Cursed Recording Sorceress's Schemes.
Yeah, actually, it might be Fires of Invention, actually. Like, there if I'm go. Actually getting into it, I think it is Fires of Invention.
Okay. That sort of feels like the representative of those kinds of cards.
Yeah. And I think for me, it is, I want it to be sideways. Like, I want it to be offbeat, but still competitive. Like, finding cards that they're at the intersection of causing you to completely change your pick orders and do something very counterculture to what the format is asking of you, while still being realistically competitive in the format.
I think also the thing that Dovin's Acuity, I feel like, fits into that as well, and the other point I will add, which I think applies to both, is there's like a fail rate to it. And maybe that's why, and I know Secrets of Strixhaven will be dead and gone, maybe that's why some of the, like, the redundancy of the payoffs or the top end cards in Secrets of Strixhaven bothers me, is because there's not really a fail rate. Like, if you get Wisdom of Ages, you could probably draft a Wisdom of Ages deck. If you draft Dovin's Acuity, you might not get there. You need to get to Clear the Minds, right?
And then you can slum it with a Clear the Mind and a Junk Troller, but then you're a lot more fragile.
Correct, right? So, like, I think you also need a fail rate in, is this going to come together? Because one of the things, like, I just remember in original Innistrad, getting Spider Spawning, getting Gnaw the Bone, getting Memory's Journey, getting Runic Repetition, and being like, oh my God, we're doing it. We got all the pieces. And sometimes you'd just be like going into pack 3 and you'd be like, please, please, please give me a Runic Repetition, and it doesn't show up.
Yeah, and you gotta have the sweat.
Yeah. Gotta have the sweat. That's the D-gen in me.
All right, Avalanche 3124 says, Magic no longer exists. What game or games would be in consideration to pivot your energy and podcast to?
I don't play any other games.
I don't play any other games. But what would be in consideration to pivot your energy and podcast to? I think honest answer that I wrote down is, I think the podcast would die.
Correct.
If Magic died. Like, we would not pivot games to try to keep the podcast alive.
No. I mean, if we wanted to do that, we would have turned this into a Commander podcast a long time ago. Like, sorry, I would have pushed. If I didn't need to feel passionate about what I was talking about every week, I would have pushed. I would be like, let's fake it. Let's turn this into a Commander podcast. And,
do you remember when we were first connecting with Josh Lee Kwai, like, he asked us to come on Command Zone. Like, he was like, we should have you guys like do some Commander or something.
I don't think it was an invitation.
You don't think it was a genuine answer?
No, I think you're remembering it. My memory of it was a sort of like, it would be great to have you guys on, a sort of like that, which is different than saying you guys should come on the show. If he invited us on the show, I'm sure we would have said, yeah, I would have been like, sure, I'll fake a Commander.
No, I think he invited us to do one of the Commander games things. Like, if you guys want to make Commander decks, we would. Nah. And we were both like, nah, sorry, Commander. Commander's not for us.
Can we just do a quick pause? I really don't get the popularity of the four people sitting around a table playing Magic, like, show phenomenon.
It's like,
it just seems a little like everybody is just a little too happy. You know what I mean? Everyone's just a little too like, that joke ruled and that joke ruled and I'm having such a great time. I'm like, are you really playing Magic if you're having a great time, you know?
But they're not playing Magic. I think Commander is just a vehicle for a social event, like a social outlet. I don't think it is. I mean, it is and it isn't. But like, I was shocked when I went to Magic Con Atlanta last year that one of my friends from high school was like playing Commander and into Commander. And like, he is, I, this is gonna sound so judgy, but like he can't
careful.
He can't really hang and draft.
Just be careful. It's all just be careful. We have strayed far afield from this question.
We have. I said if there were a game in consideration, I think if Magic died, I would give Flesh and Blood a try. And okay. See how it felt. And see if I got the
No digital client, though, is a really tough.
Oh, so. Okay, never mind. Scratch that. Maybe, okay, so Hearthstone Battlegrounds?
I guess. Well, that's like an auto battler.
Yeah, but it's drafting. It's all draft. If you came on that journey with me, I would do that.
What if we pivoted to a reality competition TV recap and strategy show?
I would also be in for some Survivor. Would you?
But what would we do? We would have to do more than just Survivor. Because
what are we talking like Big Brother, Traitor,
all of it. We would have to become connoisseurs of the genre.
The de facto go to reality TV strategy and podcast analysis.
Yeah,
I would go on that journey with you. I think the most likely thing that would happen would be that we would like slowly wind it down and fade out. Like, I think we would keep doing a lull style show, like where we would talk and then just the podcast would fade out and die, come to a natural resting state. But I also don't think Magic's gonna die. Like, and even if it does, I still think there will be things to podcast about for quite a while. Like, I was playing Warcraft 3 online, like, well after Warcraft 3 had died. Like, just getting those elf starts going, like, man.
Not even like going on like Battle.net and playing the tower defense.
Oh, mobs. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, from Twitter, Carl 2.cubed asks and I said this question is perverted in my notes. Would you rather be forced to always take the highest win rate card every pick the rest of your life, or you can still pick what you want, but every time it's not the highest win rate card, you get 15 DMs asking why you didn't take that card, and you're forced to read them?
I mean, it's got to be B, right? But it's just going to lower my enjoyment of Magic so much.
I really don't know if I can pick. I know, like, I guess I have to. I honestly think I would pick A. I would just take the highest win rate card out of every pack.
Conflict avoidant of you.
It's not conflict avoidant. It's just like, that would... You're telling me how many picks a draft am I going to get these DMs?
But you just wouldn't get to draft if you chose A.
What do you mean?
You would just be, it would be like playing Sealed. You would be handed a pile of cards every time. You would have no agency.
But I would be free of the comments.
You would be free of the comments. That is true. I choose B. Mark Anderson, Neo MTG, says, your show run format seems fairly stable at the moment. Previews, Crash Course, PT Worlds draft reviews, 50 takes, etc. What are some of the different episodes you either used to do before that don't exist anymore or discussed as possibilities that never made the cut?
Well, it sounds like you want to get more designer interviews.
I do. Yeah, I would like to make that once per. But the formats go by so quickly, it would be hard. Maybe the main sets, or if there's a set we really like, because that's also a more fun interview than interviewing them about a format we don't like.
A set we like that puts more of a time crunch on, like, okay, we gotta reach out to the person and line them up.
I think those episodes were good enough that it would be worth it. Between us and Data, after we've put out like 3 episodes about a format, I don't think there is that many new discoveries to be made about a format generally.
I agree.
So,
okay.
I think it would be worth trying to push for that to be in there.
I like that.
I think we used to do more episodes like early on about making your own luck or synergy theory, like level up style episodes. I feel like we have gotten away from that. Mm-hmm. A little bit. And I could see that being worthwhile to bring back. I was trying to think about possibilities that never made the cut. And I think one time I floated doing an entire Data satire episode. And I think you shot it down pretty hard.
What was the bit?
It was just that we were going to like come at it like Data heads, but not tell anyone what we were doing and just do a satire show.
What's the joke?
We hate Data. I think this is about how the conversation went.
Yeah.
That's my memory.
Yeah, you're like, here's my great idea. What if we alienated our listeners for an entire hour? Would that be good? And yeah, I probably said no. I miss the gameplay review episodes. They're really hard to do. It's hard to like get game states that are interesting enough to talk about, but not too complicated that you're spending like 5 minutes describing the board state. There's a new Magic podcast out there from some folks at Team Sanctum with Jason Yee and Ryan Condon called, I think it's Play of the Game. And that's what they do. That's all they are doing is reviewing a game state each episode. And I also was thinking, well, maybe now that like we're on YouTube and half our audience is on YouTube, we could bring those back because they're a lot easier if you're just like, hey, follow along at home. We're not going to hold your hand. And I will say, having listened to Play of the Game, that they're always like, make sure you open the 17 lands link and follow along. I never follow along visually. I'm always listening in the car and I have no problem playing along at home with what they do. So having been a listener for those episodes, I'm wondering if I'm like, eh, we could bring it back. So that's one. And I really like talking about Cube with you. Like we do that on Lords Unlimited quite a bit. Like I like talking about Vintage Cube and I feel like we partially have gotten shy with it on the main episodes because it's not very popular with our audience, it seems like, and there's a bit of market saturation in the Cube world and we're sort of worried, like, are we adding anything to the mix? But I might say those things be darned and let's bring some Cube episodes back.
Two similar questions here. Chris Schlui wants to know, why did you guys stop competing against Team LR Reset? And when can we expect this to return? It was the best. Similarly, Pete, aka Charlie Racecar, wants to know, when's the next showdown? This would be a great set to get the tradition rolling again. And I think the answer to both of these questions is, unfortunately, this is never coming back. It just doesn't seem realistic, short of us like somehow digging into LSV's ego and telling him that we're the better podcast. And, you know, if they want to prove it, they need to bring the LR showdowns back. Talking some smack and getting LSV out of his shell that way. But I think truly what happened was LSV was the driving force behind Team LR participating. And I think since these showdowns stopped, which happened because of scheduling, or why did they stop the first time?
I want a little story time platform.
Okay.
So first, us like working for CFB started out as like a just shooting our shot. I remember listening to the first episode of Constructed Resources, which was a podcast that LSV and Andrew Beckstrom did. And the first episode, LSV was like, oh yeah, we're always looking for like new podcasts to roll out for CFB. And I was like, well, he said it. So I sent him a message and I was like, hey, we have a great show. I think we'd be a great companion piece to LR. I think we're in pretty different spaces. Like, I think we would bring a lot to the channel. And that is how that started. And that was just such a great time to like get on board. That was when like Gabby Sparks was doing their like content manager program. And she was such a big champion for us. And anyway, so that was great. And then the showdown started as just a weird call out from them on their show, right? They were like saying like, oh, now Lords Limited is under the CFB umbrella. And I think LSV basically designed the teams. He was like, it'll be Ben and Ethan and Alex, because Alex was also writing for CFB. And the two of us and BK will be our third. And we engaged with it. We were like, sure, bring it on. Let's do it. We didn't get paid for those or anything.
Correct.
We just did them under the CFB umbrella. And coordinating six adult schedules in three different time zones is very tough.
Difficult.
That's a very difficult thing to do. To your point, it was very clear that Luis was into doing it way more than Marshall and BK were, I think. And I think he now gets his team draft fix from the Cube Discord.
Cube server. But it was going for a while, and then we missed one. But why did we miss the first one? I don't remember.
I don't. Maybe it was scheduling issues. We missed one.
Maybe it was scheduling issues. No. It was that the matchmaking didn't work on Arena. That was what it was. Don't you remember? We were doing it.
No, we couldn't. We hadn't. Did we? We didn't start it. We were just worried about like the matchmaking was broken. And so we were like, maybe we got
but one time in it, it was broken. Okay. And the next time we were worried about it and it didn't seem to work. So we didn't schedule it. And then once we didn't schedule one, like that's why you got to keep your podcast consistent. If you want to start your podcast or whatever, like you got to be there every week. Cause once you're not, people are going to go somewhere else. And I think that was what happened. I think the direct challenge bug got us. And then also LSV is just getting his team fix in cube servers, which is preferable to him. I think if we floated doing a cube team draft showdown, I think he would be in for that.
Yeah, maybe. Here's the thing. Here's the sound bite. We were on an absolute heater. We went 4-1. We were 4-1 in the last five drafts. We went from being down 7-3 to being down 8-7. And I think that's why they stopped.
Maybe. But also, if you want to add to the soundbite, the ones they won, we got exceptionally unlucky in. Like, we are favored in those drafts against that team. And I think if we floated a cube team draft, I think LSV would assume that they would dunk on us. And I think we would still be favored in a cube draft showdown.
In a powered cube draft showdown? No way.
In a powered cube draft showdown. BK would be insane.
That's right. LSV and BK would be insane.
But also, like, LSV publishes every draft he does. If I am to LSV's left or passing to LSV, I could hook cut him so hard. Like, I could tell you every single card he's going to pick out of every single
pass pack. Pass him to Larian Academy, and he does the classic hand rub together.
I could hook cut him so hard.
Okay, Galen Snyder asks, which of the Lords would go further on Survivor? What would your respective strengths and weaknesses be? I said diabetes notwithstanding, which I think cuts me out from playing the game at all. But I think we'd actually both get pretty far. I give you the edge because I think you suffer fools publicly way more often than I have to. And so I think you would be a lot better at like hiding your disdain for people. So I think you would go further. But I think we would bring we would play similar games, and I think we would similarly be able to get pretty deep.
I think you would be much better at connecting with people initially for me. I think my weakness would be, I think if I could get past the, like, initially building.
You are an introvert. You are an introvert.
And I would struggle with initially building relationships with people. And I think a strength of mine would be suffering fools very well. Like, that wouldn't be a problem for me. It would be, I'm not fun. Like, that would be my weakness. Like, I'm not. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're
good time. I don't agree.
You're fun. But you know me well. Like, I'm fun once I know people well. And I am initially not fun at all. Like, and I think that would be a real weakness for me on Survivor. And I think I would have to try really hard to get out of my comfort zone. But what I am good at is I think I'm good at reading situations and adapting to whatever the situation calls of me socially, even if it is not my natural inclination. Like, I think that would be a strength, but a weakness would be it's not natural, and people might see that it's not natural for me. But I also think there's some percentage chance that I just wouldn't connect with people and would be a very early vote out, because I'm also not going to be bringing tons of tribe strength.
You would do fine in group challenges. You would not be the weakest link, for sure.
I would not be the weakest link, but I'm not going to be Jonathan any tribes.
Sure.
John Leibowitz, HP for the TD, says, if you two were to both start playing a new TCG, what do you think each person's respective strengths and weaknesses would be to learning the new game? I think it is exactly what our strengths and weaknesses are with Magic. Like, I think I would quickly come to a big picture understanding of what the game incentivizes you to do.
That is exactly what I wrote.
I think you would be in the weeds and finding, like, you would be exploring each archetype one by one. And finding what makes the archetypes tick one by one in a very specific manner.
Weakness for myself, I said patience. And weakness for you, I said he just wants an auto battler.
That's true.
Fletcher says, usually in spoiler season, we guess the format speed from a card file, but can you try that in reverse? Let's say I'm from the future and I can tell you for sure that an upcoming set will be a fast, limited format. Could you then make guesses about the kinds of cards that are in it?
I also think there's something missing from this question. I think this question is super fun and super interesting. I also think we should be making guesses about what kind of cards aren't in it as well.
Ooh, okay.
Because if it's a fast environment, like you cannot put a 1-white, 1/1 draw card cantripping creature in it or something. Like that is going to slow the format down.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I just wrote sort of like interaction that lines up poorly with creatures. So I guess that's is there not a single red deal 2 or a single black -2/-2?
Right. Is the deal 3 in red, 2 in a red? Like, is it open fire instead of what we've been getting lately, which is one in a red deal 3 at either sorcery or instant speed?
I also think cheap creatures that scale with the game, and maybe that's to your point, not the like a 2-mana 1/1, but like something that can grow as the game progresses, or like things that have like adapt or something, like Soraform Hybrid being a 2/2 that is also good to draw later because you can adapt it and make it a 6/6. Like those are cards that I think would make for faster formats generally.
I think you would also see a lot of creatures with higher power than toughness. I think that's a defining feature of fast formats. You would expect to certainly see mechanics that incentivize you to attack or help you attack. Like those are even the better ones. Not the ones that incentivize you to attack, but the ones that help
give
you
bonuses.
Attack.
Yeah. For attacking. Yeah. Yeah. Like whatever. Survivor flopped as a mechanic, or survival flopped as a mechanic in Duskmourn, because it didn't do anything intrinsically to help your creatures survive attacking.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. We've got from Blue Sky. I feel like this question was for you, but I had a lot of fun answering it. Gust98 says, if WotC called you to make a set with a flavor based on music, what are at least two mechanics you would make?
I have brainstormed a lot about this one. I don't have hard and fast answers. I just have like stuff that I would like kind of open-ended to play around. So if you have hard and fast answers, you should go first.
I'm introducing a new artifact token called Sheet Music. So Sheet Music is a new artifact token, and you can pay one tap sacrifice for an effect called Play This Music, which is surveil one, gain one. So the idea being it's something for the mind and something for the body. We'll surveil one and gain one. So that's what you get for the artifact token. And that plays in conjunction. I don't know if there's going to be more than just maybe other cards will be Sheet Music in the set, but there are these Sheet Music tokens, or maybe other cards have the Play This Music text, etc. And then I'm going to introduce some sort of global day-night style mechanic called Flat Sharp. So that gets activated when a piece of music is played. And I don't know how it's going to work. Is like if two pieces of music are played, or if no pieces of music were played on the previous turn, like how does it flip? I don't know. And then there are going to be some things that get benefits when the music is flat, and some things that get benefits when the music is sharp. Those are my mechanics.
I like it. That one kind of goes along with one that I've been tooling around with, which is that I kind of want there to be, but this is so complicated, that's why I don't really like it, but I want there to be something called like play a chord or play a scale or something like that, where like almost like
ooh, it could be what like was start the your thing where you,
no. What the thing, that's what tempo is going to be. Tempo is my other mechanic.
Okay.
It's going to be similar to start your engines, but what was the thing that rewards you for having City's Blessing, 10 things on the battlefield? Uh-huh. Like I want permanents on the battlefield to have note names on them, like A, B, C, D, E, F, G randomly. Oh. Like those are the 7 music notes. And then I want there to be like chords that you can play, but then you have to have like people. But if this format were for people who knew music theory, it would be very fun. Like, so you could play a C major chord if you had a permanent on the battlefield that had a C and an E and a G. So you have all these notes available to you, and then you'd have permanents that would like have activated abilities of play a chord, and you'd select your permanents that were playing the chord. And so it would start with everything having one of those note names that are permanents on the battlefield. And then instead of +1/+1 counters and -1/-1 counters, you would have sharp counters and flat counters. So to build cooler chords, you could, like, if you wanted to build then like a C dominant seventh chord, you'd need C, E, G, B, but then you'd have to have a flat counter on your B. And then you could get big, you could get
so convoluted.
It's so convoluted. You'd have to have people with an intimate knowledge of music theory, but I think that would be very fun to do something like that. Or you could play a scale. Like if you had a run of C, D, E, F, G, you could play like a miniature five note scale and that would give you some sort of effect. But that like as a city's blessing, a la like you want permanents on the battlefield. If you can assemble these permanents with these different note names on them, you can do cool stuff. That's my first half-baked idea that's way too complicated. And my second one was tempo, so we can finally have an answer to what is tempo in Magic. And that there are, like, you start out going, whatever, 60 beats per minute or whatever, and you can increase 10 beats per minute at a time or something, and you increase tempo. Like, every time you attack, the tempo goes up, and then there's cards that get bonuses from the tempo of the game being faster or whatever.
Okay. Nice. Watsy, if you're listening.
There you go.
We're available.
Prismatic Viz wants to know, do you remember any specific moments that were clear level ups for your limited game?
I mean, you, I feel like, kind of answered this already.
I kind of answered this one, yeah, in the other one.
I don't remember specific things. The two things that came to mind were Ryan Sachs talking about drafting with optimism for aggro decks. That was one of our earlier episodes. But that concept of, like, drafting with optimism, building your decks with optimism, just gave me like a new lens to think about, like, oh, I should stop putting, like, so many people are like, well, if I flood out with my aggro deck, I want to make sure I have this card draw spell so that I can gas back up. And that's just wrong most of the time. I mean, you know, Cost of Brilliance and Secrets of Strixhaven notwithstanding, like, but that works because it's not really an aggro deck, it's more mid-rangey. Like, you want to be thinking about your cards in their best case scenario, not in their fail case scenario. And
but to be able to do that, you also have to understand fail case scenario and correct. What's so bad. Like, it's possible to skew too far in the direction of optimism as well, for sure. Like, then you're getting into magical Christmas land. But I agree, that is a good concept that Ryan introduced to the podcast, for sure.
And I think just mana efficiency in terms of gameplay, that I feel like is something I'm like preaching a lot. And I don't remember when like the light bulb switched for me, but like that was definitely something I didn't understand. Like, why is it so important to try and spend all your mana or as much mana as possible every turn? And like just really trying to see like, oh, it compounds over turn. Like if instead of playing, like it comes up a lot when you're like, okay, two drop and then I could spend three mana on quick study, or I could play a two drop on turn three, or I could then play two drops on turn four. Like, you just think about that scenario where if you don't play quick study on turn three, you're in just so much trouble. It's so much worse to go two drop. Well, I want to affect the board, so I'll play a two drop, light this one mana on fire. And then on turn four, what are you doing? Playing a two drop and lighting two mana on fire? Playing quick study and lighting one man on fire? Like, you could have just done everything you wanted. And that, I just, like, I don't know when that happened, but now I just see hands and turns like that.
I think other things along the way for me, I had stuff that would happen to me, like where good things would happen to me and I would become obsessed with a thing that was actually wrong. Like, I got bad feedback about things working out well for me, and then ultimately realizing, oh, that's not good. Like, I very specifically remember, what format was it? There was a trick. It was a guild set, and the blue green was Simic. It was whatever format had Evolve in it. What format that's was that? The gate, first time there was crash. Evolve. Gate crash. And yeah. There was a single green trick that lets you put a +1/+1 counter on something and untap a creature. Okay. And I loved that trick because it worked on offense and defense. Like, I would get people on defense where I would, like, I was like, oh, this is one mana Doomblade. This card is incredible. And I would get people on defense with it. But ultimately, like, playing combat, like in the long haul, playing combat tricks on defense is going to lead to you getting blown out more often than not. But I hit like many times in a row of it working out for me. And I was like, oh, this is great. I've solved magic. Efficiency is the way to go. One mana combat tricks. But then realizing that that was way better. I liked it better as a defensive trick, but realizing that that was better and safer to use on offense when your opponent was tapped out, and just understanding timing of those things. I also, speaking of timing, very clearly, this was an LR episode that I listened to about timing of removal. They did a whole episode on when to use your removal. And I had never thought about wanting to use a removal spell on your opponent's upkeep because you thought they were holding up interaction. Like if you think your opponent maybe has a counter spell or maybe a way to protect their creature that you're supposed to, like for me, it was either sorcery speed or you're trying to blow them out in combat. Yeah. Those were the two binary options. And I remember like having my mind blown when LSV or whoever it was, the co-host at that time was talking about, no, you want to do it in their upkeep, because then if they have a way to protect their creature, they have to do it on their turn. And then they're like, so you lit their, it was like what you're talking about with lighting people's mana on fire by passing and waiting till their upkeep, you light their mana on fire and then they have to use their mana that turn. But if you suspect it's like a +5/+5 spell, maybe you don't wait until their turn because then they get to cast it on their turn and crack in with their 7/7 or whatever. But just that was a very cool level up episode for me, exploring all of the different reasons for when you might use removal spells.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Last question here. Analog Caveman says, if you were to pick a set to play to introduce someone to Limited, what would you pick? Personally, I learned MTG playing Sealed. Would you recommend this or something else? Totally not asking because my girlfriend wants to learn to play. I mean, Sealed or Pack Wars seem like a good way to learn. Sealed also seems like it might be a little overwhelming. I feel like teaching new people Magic is a delicate dance. Because the reason that Magic is so fun is its complexity. And I feel like you have to like try and balance like, well, I need to dumb it down or make it simple enough for you to understand. But if I make it so simple, then I feel like I might lose you in being like, well, why is this so fun? What's the big deal? All you're doing is like play a mountain, cast a goblin, whatever. Why do I care about that? And it's like, no, there's so many things and we're not even talking about drafting yet and blah, blah, blah. And in terms of what set, I feel like Foundations would probably be the one I would pick. Like
Jumpstart is specifically made for this purpose. Yeah. Jumpstart would be great, I think. I also think if you were serious about it, you could like custom design decks. Like when my fiance was like, I want to learn to play Magic. And we tried for a little bit and then ultimately came to the conclusion of, you got to learn this on your own if you want to learn it. Because I was just so far down the path. But what I did for her was I knew what her fantasy interests were, and she was very into D&D. So I made each of us custom decks from the D&D set where like I put stuff in hers that I knew she liked from D&D, and I made a deck for me that I thought was comparable-ish in power level, but worse, so that she would beat me more often, even if she wasn't playing as well as I was. And I tried. Initially, I put no instant speed interaction in the decks. Like it was just lands, creatures, sorceries, so that there was only decisions like on your turn. And then after we'd played a couple times, I changed the decks a little bit to where there were instants and like started to explain the stack a little bit and that sort of thing. So I think if you knew there were a set, or like maybe whoever you wanted to teach was into vampires, maybe you get some Midnight Hunt and some Crimson Vow cards together. But I think that can be a good method as well, like tailoring it to the person's interests. Or if they're into Westerns, like maybe you do some OTJ or whatever. Like we have a variety of genres at this point in Magic to choose from. So I think you can also do your own thing as well. I don't think it has to be a custom set. And I would not do either Sealed or Drafts. I would hand somebody a deck and like teach them how to play.
You have chosen a path of more work for you, but I feel like ultimately a more thoughtful path
to do. Yeah, it's more reward too. Like if you really want the person to learn to play,
you're more likely
you want
to make hook it someone. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to make it as clear of an experience as possible, I think, for them.
Yeah. That tracks.
All right. That's it. That is all of our questions. How do you feel after doing a Q&A episode?
I just feel great. I love it. I think we should only do Q&A episodes.
There we go. That's my guy. Yeah, Q&A episodes are a lot of fun. So thank you for everybody who submitted questions. We'll be back in 2027 with another Q&A episode. One per year.
That's good. Just long enough for me to forget that I like doing them.
There you go. And on that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams respectively, our merch, our Patreon, all of that at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.